Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
The National Park System comprises 390 areas covering more than 84 million acres in every state. These areas include national parks, monuments, battlefields, military parks, historical parks, history sites, lakeshores, seashores, recreation areas, scenic rivers and trails, and the White House. There are approximately 20,000 permanent, temporary, and seasonal professionals who work for the National Park Service and over 125,000 people volunteer in parks each year. Nearly 300 million people come to the national parks. It costs close to $2.5 billion a year to operate. It's a big job. We just hired a new boss. What's she facing? We find out when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News. This last week, the Senate confirmed Mary Bomar as the new director of the National Park Service. This is a very political year, and it seems as if no matter what happens, things become political. And certainly the issue of national parks have become politicized because many people consider the future of national parks to be challenged by certain decisions that are coming from the political arena. So it's very important to get a sense of what this new appointment may portend for the future of national parks. We're now going to talk with someone who certainly has an interest in the future of national parks. This is Bill Wade. He's the Executive Council Chairman of the Coalition of National Park Service Retirees. Bill, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you for asking me.
First of all, for people who aren't familiar with the Coalition of National Park Service Retirees, tell us about your mission and your agenda.
Okay, well, we started our organization in May of 2003 in response to what we perceived as some significant threats and assaults against the National Park System and the National Park Service. And we've grown now to where we're just over 540 members, all former National Park Service employees. Our mission basically is to advocate for the protection of the National Park System as it was originally intended by the Organic Act of 1916, which established the National Park Service. And we do that through public information. We've been asked a number of times to testify before committees in the Congress. And just generally to be able to try to inform the public about issues that are relevant to the National Park System and what our concerns might be about those, given that we estimate we've got collectively something over 16,000 years of experience in managing national park areas.
And that's why we're talking with you. Let's talk about some of the main issues that you have been concerned about and that really drove the coalition to come together.
Under former Secretary Gail Norton and now former Director Fran Minella, there were a number of concerns, really. A number of the decisions that they were making and issues that they were attempting to carry out, we felt were diminishing the values and benefits for which the national parks were established. These kinds of things ranged from trying to reduce the water flow, for instance, through Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park, which would have materially changed the ecosystem there. Certainly the snowmobile issue in Yellowstone National Park is one that we've been very concerned about and which still has not been resolved. They're in their fourth environmental impact statement now, and that will be one of the issues that will be facing the new director as she starts into her tenure. There are issues of air quality, relaxing air quality standards that are affecting national parks. Perhaps one of the biggest ones recently that we took on was the attempt by the Department of Interior to hijack the management policies of the National Park Service and significantly changed those in ways that would have increased the potential for all kinds of additional motorized recreational vehicles to potentially run rampant through national parks, things like off-highway vehicles, snowmobiles, of course, and personal watercraft in the water areas. That particular one seems to have successfully been beaten back now, and the management policies that were just recently approved are acceptable and much more like the original policies that go back to, or the more recent policies that go back to the year 2001. So we're pretty satisfied with that. We've met that challenge and managed to succeed, I think, in making sure that there wasn't significant damage potentially caused by these management policies. But there are a number of these issues that are continuing, like the snowmobiles. I just read this morning, as a matter of fact, that Congressman Pierce has introduced, he's the National Parks Committee chair on the House side, and that he has introduced legislation that would authorize the state to claim all kinds of rights of way through public lands, including national parks. And I don't know yet what the ramification of all of that's going to be, but it sounds significant and like there could be some serious impacts as a result of this if it does pass. So I'm sure we'll be looking into that in more detail and doing what we need to do to try to either get it modified or make sure that it doesn't pass the Congress.
I think the one thing that I'm prepared to say is the fact that this administration utilizes all sorts of unique techniques to try to, as you use the term hijacking, for example, the management policies, which is one of the ways in which they change the direction without having to go through legislative processes. And that background manipulation seems to be part of their process of changing how parks are managed and their purpose. It feels as if Congressman Pierce's efforts to go back to a states' rights issue on public lands, including national parks, seems to be another attempt at inroads into park management from the outside. And so perhaps here we go again. Now let's talk about Mary Bomar. One of the things that we do know about her, she is a national park person. That is to your advantage, I have to imagine.
Well, I do know Mary. I've not worked with her real closely, but she and I have crossed paths a number of times during the years that before I retired. She did come up through what we call the administration ranks. That is to say, she worked as a chief of administration in a couple of parks and worked her way up to where she became the first superintendent, for instance, of the Oklahoma Memorial, which is a very tough job, very political in the sense that she had to coordinate with a number of entities there in establishing that and attempting to carry out its mission. She served for a while as the acting superintendent of Rocky Mountain National Park, and then she went to Independence National Historic Park, where she became superintendent and again was immersed in very intense local politics as well as national politics having to do with the management of that area, particularly during a time when they were grappling with issues of security following 9/11, and there was also a lot of construction that had finally come into phase to upgrade some of the facilities and preserve some of the historical structures there at Independence. From there, she progressed to become the regional director of the Northeast region, which, of course, includes Independence and a lot of other areas. And there have been many things going on in that region, as there are in all of them, but she seems to have handled those quite well. She seems to be very effective in handling the political issues, and as you alluded to, we think that it's a very, very significant advantage that she is a National Park Service career professional. She has a lot more experience in carrying out things related to the national park system than did her predecessor, Fran Minella, for instance. And from what I'm hearing, there's a very strong outburst of new motivation, new energy, new, I guess, good feelings from within the ranks of the National Park Service employees that one of their own, as it were, has ascended again, once again, to the directorship of the National Park Service. Many of the National Park Service directors have come from the ranks and have ascended up through the career avenues in the National Park System. But certainly Fran Minella did not have that, and so I think everyone is looking forward very positively to Mary taking the reins of the National Park Service.
People who spend time with the people of the national parks, the employees, the interpreters, the rangers, the researchers, the maintenance folks, you know, it really becomes a family. It's a terrific opportunity, and there's so many great people in the national parks. I have to believe that having really spent time in the parks, particularly in a place like Rocky Mountain National Park, that spirit, she has to be part of that. Nevertheless, it is a very powerful political position. Are there any indications about her feelings about privatization, partnerships, and expanding that in national parks, which leads to some of the other issues?
There are some indications. I know that from, you know, the areas that she worked in, like Oklahoma Memorial and Independence in particular, as well as overseeing a number of the areas in the Northeast, that she's very supportive of the concepts of partnership. She recognizes the need for partnering with a number of different entities. We hope, though, that she has a little bit different perspective about that than her predecessor does, because we felt that, and still feel, that unfortunately the whole concept of partnering and privatization is moving forward to the exclusion, I guess, of effective, professional, career-oriented management to the National Park System, and, for instance, the incorporation of good science and that sort of thing to decisions. We're concerned that, for instance, over the last few years, the employees of the National Park System have their professional judgment and their experience has been largely ignored and disrespected, and they have felt very much that way. The morale of the employees of the National Park System over the last few years is lower than anybody can remember, for perhaps as much as the last 50 years in the memory of some of our members, for instance. And so I do believe that she will restore some of that motivation. She will value the career professionalism and expertise of the employees. I believe she will value science and scientific judgment and research more in decisions of the Park Service. And I think she'll view the partnerships issue a little differently than her predecessor did, in the sense that she will, I hope anyway, recognize that the value of these partnerships should be to provide a margin of excellence rather than to take over what ought to be, in fact, inherent governmental responsibility for managing the public interest in national parks. Those are things that should not be turned over to nonprofits or to private entities, and that's the way the trend has been going, and I'm hopeful that she will see that differently and recognize there's a need for partnerships. And, you know, we've been, the National Park Service has had private partners for years. I mean, all of the concessions in the national parks are operated by private entities, and that's the way it should be, but there are certainly functions within the National Park Service that should be retained in the public interest and not turned over to private entities, and I hope that she'll see it that way.
The expansion of partnerships has been certainly an issue over the last number of years, and as an example, part of this has to do with partnering with corporations, and there's nothing wrong with that. Ford, for example, has been a wonderful partner with the parks, but there becomes a point where perhaps it goes too far. I think one of the things that people enjoy about going to national parks is when you go there, you get the sense that you're in a national park, not in a playground, not a Disneyland. There's been some movement in terms of, for example, renaming trails or facilities after a corporation. You could have like a Sony Bridalveil Falls Trail. That's, I'm making that up, but I'm saying that that's, that is one of the issues.
Well, that's part of it, for sure. I mean, any time that you entertain arrangements or agreements with certainly commercial entities and private entities, and to some cases even nonprofit and philanthropic entities, there's always a quid pro quo. If they're going to do something for the National Park Service, they logically want something in return for it. And a certain amount of recognition and a certain amount of, you know, working closely with them is certainly, is definitely appropriate, but there becomes a limit when, I think the parks lose that specialness that we have come, to, you know, we've come used to according to the parks. And like you say, we would not want to go, into Yosemite National Park, for instance, and go into an auditorium and have an interpreter stand up at the podium to deliver an orientation or an interpretation program and have a big banner behind the person on the wall saying, this program is brought to you by such and such.
Right.
I just think that sort of thing is out of place. And the more that we move in that direction, the less public the parks become and the more private they are in many different ways. And so I think, again, there's a very definite place for certain kinds of private activities that are going on in parks, concessions and that sort of thing. There's certainly a place for philanthropic and other partner kinds of things, but we need to make sure that they don't interfere with the specialness that the parks have built up over the last 90 plus years, and that the parks do remain public, that they do remain national. And I think the only way to do that is to continue to make sure that public money and public entities and career professionals continue to provide the primary way of managing national parks.
Part of the decline of the morale has to do with the lack of funding. Things are, in many cases, falling apart, and they're just not being repaired. It's a huge, just maintaining national parks is a huge endeavor. It takes a lot of money, and unfortunately that money just doesn't seem to be there right now, and there's a backlog. What can you tell us about, maybe it's your wish or your thoughts, in terms of Mary Bomar, about her fire to get that funding?
Well, you're absolutely correct. A lot of what's driving even some of these partnerships and attempts to provide more help for the parks through commercial entities and philanthropic organizations and so forth is the fact that they're currently underfunded, not only just in terms of the maintenance backlog, which continues to increase despite promises that were made by President Bush throughout his term so far. That maintenance backlog does not seem to be going down, and in fact it seems like it's going up. But also the annual day-to-day operating funds that are needed at the park level just to continue to have permanent positions filled, critical ones, for instance, that might be resource specialist oriented, to be able to do the annual ongoing maintenance and preventive maintenance and to provide both visitor and resource protection. And the interpretive programs, all of that is going down, and I think the National Parks Conservation Association estimated just recently that the annual operating deficit in the national park system in all the parks is somewhere around $800 million now. So, you know, that's going to be a problem in the future, and I don't know what the answer is there, whether there needs to be consideration to actually instituting some closures of certain parts of parks during certain days of the week or certain months of the year in order to begin to save some of that money and put the money that is available to the higher priority things that are going on, because it doesn't seem like there's much probability given the world situation and the country's economic situation, that there's going to be much relief in the immediate future in terms of, the budget situation. It certainly is an issue of national priority, and I guess if enough citizens of this country began to speak out that about their concerns of deteriorating conditions and deteriorating protection of resources in national parks, then perhaps Congress would get the message and figure out where to get some additional money so that parks don't continue to spiral down and we end up, the biggest fear, of course, or the biggest potential consequence is that we begin to lose valuable resources, either historic structures that once they get to a certain point, you can rehabilitate them and you can rebuild them, but they're no longer historic. They're replicas or something like that. And if we lose precious, rare, or threatened species because we haven't been able to provide enough protection patrols and poaching increases, for instance. So there are all kinds of problems that face that are going to face Mary Bomar, and I know that she, perhaps even more than her predecessor, she's going to be knowledgeable about those. She's going to be concerned about those. And I don't have any doubt that she will fight to try to overcome some of these operating deficiencies and so forth. But in the end, it's on the shoulders of the Congress largely. Certainly the administration makes its recommendations and makes its requests for money. So that's the immediate hurdle, but it's up to Congress to decide whether or not to give the Park Service the money it needs. And in my judgment, the only way that's probably going to be accomplished is that the American public demonstrates that that's one of its priorities.
You know, it's interesting how quickly the opinions start coming out. I, for example, read somewhere, which I don't recall right now, that people are suggesting that Mary Bomar may be in favor of continued snowmobile use in Yellowstone. That probably may be one of the first issues that she's going to have to be confronted with. Are you hearing something similar, that she seems to be in favor of continued snowmobile use?
Well, I think where that is coming from is that she did make a statement at her confirmation hearing in response to a question from one of the senators. She did make a statement that she understood that the current levels of snowmobile use in Yellowstone were not leading to or resulting in unacceptable impacts. And that statement is kind of the statement that has been used by the previous director and the people in the Department of Interior when questioned about the snowmobile use in Yellowstone. And I think that she basically was briefed to use the same statement during her confirmation hearing. I am not yet willing to suggest that she is going to stand by that, or that she's not going to get more knowledgeable and make a determination based on her own judgment and based on the facts and based on the science that's presented to her. As she does learn more about it, I think that if the truth were known, she probably would lean, toward making absolute sure that the resources of the world's first national park aren't impaired in any way by snowmobiles or anything else. Not unlike the fact that I'm sure that while she managed Independence National Historic Park, which arguably on the cultural and historical area side held the same status and the same level of reverence that Yellowstone did on the natural side, that she wouldn't have wanted anything to impact that place. And so I think that as she becomes more knowledgeable, she will form her own judgment and her own opinion. But it's definitely one of those factors that's going to be facing her within the first few months of her directorship, and I think she'll consider all sides and make a judgment accordingly.
Hopefully, as you say, she'll rely on the science, because there's been a lot of professionals who have come out with real science on that issue.
Well, the science has been pretty firm over the last 12 years since this controversy started, that there definitely are impacts. And for instance, some of the information that's coming out of Yellowstone right now indicates that even with the reduced numbers over the last two seasons, that there still is that the noise situation is still exceeding the thresholds that were established by the National Park Service, and that at certain times and in certain places, the carbon monoxide levels, for instance, as well as other pollutants, are exceeding those thresholds. So it's really not accurate to say that there aren't impacts. I guess the whole issue is going to turn on, you know, the definition of unacceptable impacts. And of course, we have our view about what's unacceptable, and you know, we're hoping that the science will demonstrate to Ms. Bomar that even the levels that are there now are probably providing or contributing to unacceptable impacts.
We're talking with Bill Wade, who is the Executive Council Chairman of the Coalition of National Park Service Retirees, about the recent confirmation of Mary Bomar as the new Director of National Parks. Well, Bill, let's say that you could sit down in a private conversation with Mary Bomar and just lay it on the table. What would you say to the new National Park Director?
Well, I would certainly first of all tell her that she is held in very, very high regard by the employees of the National Park System, and that they are very hopeful and are very excited and energized by the fact that she's become director, and that she needs to make sure that they're valued, that their judgment and experience is used and considered, unlike has been the case in the last six or so years. I would also advise her that she needs to very strongly consider science and research in decision making in parks, and in considering those decisions that come to her level about uses and protections of parks and so forth. I would also advise her to continue the emphasis on partnerships and so forth, but to be very careful that that is done in a way that preserves the nationalness of national parks and preserves the fact that almost all of the functions of the national park system ought to be public and not privatized. And I guess lastly, I would suggest that she do everything she can to provide a compelling case to the Congress that parks are important to the American public, and that they need to be funded at a level that resources will not be damaged and will not deteriorate over time. And I think if she carries out those things, she will go down in history as a good director.
Well, coming from the Executive Council Chairman of the Coalition of National Park Service Retirees, which represents thousands and thousands of years worth of professional park experience, I think the new park director would be wise to keep an open ear. Bill Wade, tell us how people can find out more about your organization.
We do have a website. It is www.npsretirees, all one word, .org. And we do have information there about the issues and action issues that we're concerned about and actions that we've taken over the recent past. And we would invite people to go there and learn a little bit more about us.
Well, Bill Wade, it's always good to talk with you, and it's so great to have you give me your thoughts here on the Wild Side News.
Good. Thank you again for asking me. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
You bet. Bye.
Well, it's probably time to lighten up a little as we do just that, as we migrate out to Great Smoky Mountains National Park and follow the monarchs on their fall flights. We'll be right back.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool block skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.